have to feel like I have to project my voice or anything. So, yeah, this is so good. In an ideal world, we would hear what the other person's saying and take tangible steps to solve situations that are frustrating. But unfortunately, a lot of times one person's not willing to do that. And then you're stuck with an impasse or a standoff mm-hmm. or a face-off, right? Mm-hmm. And those are very frustrating situations. It leaves people feeling isolated, and eventually it breaks the love that binds the two together. Especially when you're communicating and someone's defending themselves, and that just ends up in blocks and blows, and it's not a good situation. So sometimes it's imperative, though, that you have to address and change things. Sometimes you have to address the problem. You have to be mature enough to handle it with words. Mm-hmm. You know how you say to your children, you know, use your words. Sometimes you can maybe think you're doing the right things, but responses and text messages now and Facebook posts, they can all be taken personally, even though you don't direct them at somebody. So many times they can be taken the wrong way, or they could be in the face of somebody that has an issue with you. Mm-hmm. And we have to just be really willing to step out in awkwardness and handle some of these things verbally, even risking the fact that you might, like you said, you might not solve the problem all the time, but you know that initiated mm-hmm. to solve the problem, and you gave a chance without demeaning or, you know, minimizing the other person, you know, even with their hang-ups. You know, I don't like having hang-ups, but I'm sure I have a few that slipped in there in the blind spot. Hi. But I just feel like I really take control of hang-ups. But you know what? People have hang-ups. And sometimes we don't know what they are, but there are a lot of things to remember before you're going to bring up something that's sensitive. Or like if you have to make that call, there are some things that you have to know. You have to handle it with care. So you can't just go in there like, you know, this. A lot of times, interestingly enough, a lot of times when someone thinks negative of you, it's almost a psychological response. You almost take on that persona of what they think about you when you see them.
Hmm.
So, I mean, did you ever have someone that had an issue with you? And then when you go in the room, it's like you bristle around them. Like you almost like have an issue with them, that they have an issue with you and you don't want to go around them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost, you know, that love begets love thing. And hate begets hate. You know, it's kind of like it perpetuates. And so you have to be sure that you're going to handle this with really a lot of care. When you try to handle the situation, it has to be delicate. If anybody becomes defensive or feels verbally attacked, you might as well forget about it. You know what? I mean, I think back in your life of how many times that you've been approached to change, whether it was from your parents, a boss, or somebody. You're cruising along life. You think you're doing everything okay. Like we're not doing anything wrong purposely. And then someone comes up to you and says something that you maybe even are passionate about doing, that you're handling it the wrong way or doing it wrong, or in their opinion, it is going to be injurious to you, where you think it's going to be profitable or advantageous to you. So a lot of times you don't take it right away. It's very hard to take it right away. It's hard to, even if you did take it right away and you decided to jerk the wheel of the boat's rudder, by the time that boat's turned, it's going to take a while. And I just feel like we need to give people more time, a lot of times, especially men, but we'll get into that later. But they stonewall, they need more time to, you know, we process things a lot quicker than them. And it's just a medical fact. And so we expect, you know, husband's like, no, we want to handle it now. But no, just answer me. And they're like, wait a minute. And we're pushing them. And they haven't even processed the information yet. So we have to be really patient. And we have to handle it with care. So also, we have to know about blind spots. I drove a Suburban. And they had a commercial or something. They had all these kids in the back of the Suburban. And you couldn't even see them when you were backing out. Like you could use your mirrors and you couldn't see them. We have blind spots, you know, and we don't know our blind spots because we're blinded to them, but we all have them. And so we have to realize that we have to be alert that we need a warning system for our marriage and the way we handle things too. So we want to set up something. So keep the climate open for change. Also, knowing that from time to time, if you think you could handle it, it's sometimes, you know, not the right time in your life. But, you know, sometimes if everything's cruising along and you can handle the answer, ask your husband if there's anything that you're doing that's irritating to him, that you would like, that he would like you to change. You know, or in the midst of a really nice time that you're having, you could just say, you know, is there anything that really bothers you that I do? I don't want to unintentionally bother you. You know, because sometimes people aren't going to say anything and it might be something that's real easy for you to change. And I think like just leaving yourself open to change sometimes is really a powerful character trait. So anyways, this should be a normal occurrence in relationships. I mean, you would never get a review with your boss without him going over your strengths and your weaknesses. Every year you're going to go in, usually before your raise. So I think that kind of mollifies whatever said in the review, you know. But usually, and they always tell you what you're doing that's really good. And that's a good way to start the convo, you know, on a date night with your husband too, or your significant other, just, or anybody. Like, you know, the things that they appreciate, you know, the things that are working in your relationship. In fact, I will tell you one thing I learned in communication classes is that, and especially Dale Carnegie really taught this well, when you're going to handle a problem with anybody that's even above you in authority or even not, or even a peer or a friend or a family member, you know, it's so wise to start out by saying all the pluses in the relationship first. And then I think that hearing that affirmation, because sometimes we're not as affirmative in our words. We don't take the time to express mm-hmm. the things that we do appreciate. So I think when you're going to correct a problem, I found even with teenagers, you know, it's very, very wise to say the things that you really do appreciate about them first. A lot of times my kids will even ask me for my opinion about the way that they're raising their kids or something, and, you know, how I, if I noticed anything. And I will always start out with the many, many things that they're doing right, so they know that it's not just that one thing. Because honestly, people could tell you you're great and you're beautiful, but if they tell you one negative thing, what do you focus on? The mm-hmm. negative thing. So it's good to kind of balance that negativity off with an exponential number of positive things, you know? So I would probably try to do that. Then I think it's easier for someone to take too. I think it's really easier to take. That's why I think it's really important that we do use our words to often affirm somebody, because if somebody realizes that you're on their team, it's just so much easier to respect any kind of constructive criticism that you have for them. You know what I mean? So if I know you're on my team and you're not critiquing me all the time, mm-hmm. I'm going to be less hostile to anything that you have for input, because I know that you want me to be victorious in the way I'm living. So I think like that goes without saying. So with that in mind, I think that when you are going to go handle a situation, you want the other person to know that you are for them and not against them. Because if you're not able to start that kind of a conversation out with that premise, then it's going to be headed down the wrong road quick anyways, because they're probably going to start out defensive, thinking you're against them. And any conversation that starts out defensive, you have other things to address before you can get to the main point. Because as long as someone's defending themselves, they're not going to be open to anything that resolves a problem. So it's just, that is just basic problem solving. And that is why a lot of times when you're trying to solve the problem in the midst of a heated argument or something, that's why a lot of times that isn't successful, because the other person you're not on the ground with them where they would welcome your critique. Mm-hmm. So we want to get them at least to know what we value about them, which is going to be, you know, a little bit, you know, it's important. I mean, even if you haven't talked to the person in a long time, I haven't talked to family members in a long time, and I would be able to say, look, you know, even if there's not a lot that you can even say, you can say, you know, you're my family. You know, you can say, you know, we go way back. I don't want to lose this relationship. I was talking to someone who hadn't seen someone in so long, and they just never wanted to get together. And, you know, she just said, I don't want to look back in 10 years and not have you in my life. You know, mm-hmm. I want to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's different ways that we can creatively know how to reach someone if we just calculate and think of a bridge. Mm-hmm. And it takes a while, just like it does to build a bridge. To build a bridge may take a little bit of time, but, you know, it might be that card that you're sending every year, you know, still thinking of you. You know, I know many, many, many situations that were hostile in families. My one friend, she and her sister didn't talk for 20-some years. But, and each one of them were so beautiful, and I was always praying for them. It hurt me. I think sometimes it hurt me more than it hurt them. But over the years, they are both beautiful people. They're both growing as people. And all of a sudden, they just decided, you know, one of them would be going after the other one. They'd retreat, and then the other one would go after it. It was just like not working, but they both never gave up, and they are reconciled. And that's wonderful. And then there's a lot of times that it doesn't reconcile. But like we said at the beginning of this class, knowing that you did the right thing and that problem isn't making you have issues with other people or get ugly, like that to me is what we can control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were just talking the other night and someone was asking me, well, how do you do that? How do you take those feelings off because you feel so bad about someone? You know, sometimes you just, mm-hmm. it's just not good. But if you're a woman of character, you don't want to feel that way about somebody. It irks you that you feel that way. You don't even want to feel that way. And I was telling this mom, she was a mom of young people, so I said, well, when your baby spits up all over your shirt and you start to smell it and you're thinking, that smells disgusting. I don't want this on me. I don't want to wear this. I don't want this to be my smell, you just do something very simple. Go take the sweater off. You know? Take it off. Throw it in the laundry. And guess what? Put something else on. And that is as simple as that. We complicate things. You don't like the way you're feeling about something. You don't like the way that you're presenting something. You don't like the way you're sounding. You don't like that feeling that's inside of you that's really getting ugly. We know when we're getting ugly. Then you know what? Take it off. You smell. And go put on a different shirt. You have to decide what you want to wear. Right? It's simple. Mm-hmm. You decide. No one else can decide for you. The other person, just like the baby, can spit up all over you. They can make it really hard. You might have to change your shirt 5 times. But you know what? You decide what shirt you get to wear. And I don't let people manipulate my character by their lack of character. Because what you are is you're both sitting here and you're getting along and you're getting along, and then someone decides that they're going to be ugly and nasty and they drop they drop way down, and then all of a sudden you're just like, oh, I'll get even with that person, and you drop down to their level. That's not God's way of doing things. So that's really important. Anyways, when someone, confrontation is not easy, but if you believe that there's a big problem, it's going to cause a problem in your relationship, then you have to confront it. You have to. It takes time, you know, to also realize if someone ever comes to confront you, know how hard it is and try not to make it that difficult for them. You know, kind of meet them halfway. If they're really thinking that it's something and they're hemming and hawing and it's awkward for them, say, you can let me have it and I'll think about it. Even if you don't agree with them, give it a few days. It'll give you something to think about, and then you can go back. And talk about it when you can think and say, I'm sorry, that's your perspective. I never meant to mean it that way. I'm trying to think of what I can do to come off thus that way, you know, or whatever it is. But I'll tell you something. With online buying, sometimes it's really quick, easy to buy things. So a lot of times it's like, you know, one click shopping and it's on the way to your house before you even, you're like, was that a 4-pack or a 6-pack? You know, you don't even know. But one of the things I do is I stick stuff in my cart and then I just delete it, like delete the page. And then I'll wait a couple days and say, do I still really want that? And I am going to tell you, it is crazy how often I don't want that stuff. It is literally crazy. I don't buy more stuff than I buy. I just changed my mind. I'm like, yeah, I don't really need that. I don't really want that. Yeah, not really. But you know what? We're so quick now with texting and something that you can just send something off before you even think about it. And then you don't even think about it. I think that is so unwise. I think that we need to give ourselves more time to really think about it and try even, you know, once you send it out to, it's out there forever. Never goes away. I think it's really wise to handle delicate situations by phone. Not only can someone not take your words out of context and use them against you or misread them, people can hear your heart and know it's important enough for a phone conversation, you know? So I just think you have to really be careful. But perspective is important too, because if you're playing sports, my kids would play sports and, you know, my daughter would say, that coach always, you know, that ref always calls me off signs and I'm, you know, or off the line and I am not off the line. And I said, well, that's too bad, because if he thinks that you're off the line, whether you are or not doesn't even matter. Just the fact that he thinks that you are changes your game, doesn't it? I said, so now you have to make sure that you don't look like you're anywhere near the line, because you know that if you're near, he sees you over. So you better take a step back and pretend like the line is a foot inside. So we have to remember that whether or not someone's perspective is right, when he's your husband or you're stuck with him in your family, that changes your game. And so you have to consider the other person's perspective. And everyone sees things. We talked about already with different glasses. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it depends on what your background is. You might be a person who always feels left out. And so something someone does can make you feel left out where somebody normally wouldn't feel that way. We don't even know all the things that are involved in someone's perspective, but we have to consider other people's perspective. Also, we have to purify our motives. You know, I love what the Bible says in James 3, 2. If someone doesn't, all of us make a lot of mistakes, it says. If someone doesn't make any mistakes when he speaks, he would be perfect and he would be able to control everything he does. So what does that tell you? First of all, we all make mistakes, and where do we make the most mistakes? With the things we say. It's just the way it is. If you can control your mouth, you're perfect. Mm-hmm. And no one's perfect. So usually that's the last thing you have to control. Control your actions way more than your heart. That's why I was like, your mouth. I'm always like, Lord, change my heart, because your mouth talks from your heart. So we really need a heart change. If you want to change your heart, your mouth, don't just put duct tape on. You know, you've got to change your heart. If you change your heart, you'll change your mouth. So a lot of times if people are unloving or unkind or you're going through a situation with someone, just try to find the good in them, like we do with our husbands. Put an eye blinder over to their problems and try to look from the good side. I love Psalm 39. It gives me a lot of helpful guidelines. It says, I will keep my mouth with a bridle while the wicked are before me. Now, the wicked means morally wrong or actively bad or one that did wrong. So while someone's before you that's done wrong or you feel wronged by, I love that word picture, and I have to tangibly think of a muzzle, you know, or a bridle. Like, it helps me. That's how much your mouth has to keep shut. And then it says,
hold your peace, which I love. You have to have peace to hold it. Peace is the word Irene. I always wanted to name my kid Irene. I thought that was so beautiful. The name means peace, which is the absence of negative emotions. I mean, if you have the absence of negative emotions, I can pretty much tell you, you have just lowered your risk from any significant diseases by a very large percentage. Because not only is that wonderful for your relationships, it's wonderful for your health too, to not have all that negativity and all that animosity and all that hostility all churning inside of you. That's what creates all these diseases. But you have to hold your peace even from speaking good. Isn't that something? Sometimes you're like, well, what I have to say is good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes that's still not the time to say it. That's what it's sometimes it's hard to take. You're like, I have the right thing to say. Sometimes it's not the right time mm-hmm. to say the right thing. And you need to zip it. So also, make sure that your emotions are not negative if you're going to talk about sensitive things. And it says in verses 4-7, you know, then I held my peace and, you know, I prayed inside, Lord, help me to know how frail I am in the measure of my days. You know, when you realize that we could just as easily jump in there and muddle everything up with our words, and, you know, it helps us to, you know, have humility in the way that we're handling the situation. And humility is just knowing what you're capable of, who you are and who you're not. But I think part of humility is knowing what you're capable of and knowing that your ability to not be errant in the same fashion is because of all the grace that you've been given and the power of God that you've been given. It's nothing that we have on our own. So we can't be, you know, brag like we're the ones who, you know, mustered it up in our life. So then it says, when you open your mouth, it says, then I opened my mouth, but not I, then the Lord could speak through you. Open your mouth when God can speak through you, when you can speak with love and humility and, you know, without making somebody feel like a piece of dirt, you know. We have to really be careful. And I think that's what makes the end of problems. I know so many people that have ended long-term problems with people because they consistently did not respond back in kind. I mean, I had one friend and her husband didn't know the Lord, and she would just get up and she'd go, do you mind if I go to church? And if he minded, she stayed home, and if he didn't mind, she would go to church. She was always praying for him, and he just didn't want to go to church, and, you know, there's a lot of other things, but she just always let him be the head of the household. She honored him. She respected him. He knew that she respected him. And one day he came to church and he went up to the altar and he turned his life over to the Lord. And all these years went by and I had lost touch with her. So I didn't know that happened, but I was going to go speak at a church for Christmas. And they said the pastor's last name. And I said, wait a minute, is his wife so-and-so? And they said, yeah. And I said, what? He was pastoring a church. I was like, boy, that is so cool. But see, I just think that we have to be careful. I love the example of Queen Esther. I think I need to be Queen Esther. Because they got Queen Esther, but they had to spend 6 months of purification before she could even go into the king. 6 months of purification. Do you know why that purification has to happen? Because it's not like me. I'll go run, you know, 6 miles, and then I don't have time to take a shower, so I'll grab my, you know, little lemon spray, and I'll just like, and out the door I go. So I smell like a lemon sweat shoe or something. I mean, who knows what I smell like. But I mean, there's something that things that lemon is not going to hide, you know what I mean? I mean, I know that, but I have to pick money. So, I mean, I clean up well when I clean up, but I just don't have that much time to do that every time. So, but it is funny because when you're purifying yourself to really, so that from within your heart is coming the right things. You know what I mean? So even with your husband, I have such an easy time just piling up stuff against my husband. He doesn't even know it. You know, it's a horrible thing. So I don't like that. And so I just fight against that. I just don't accept it in my life. And when I find myself starting to do it, I've taught these classes and gone through them enough. I think it's because I need them the most. And I really think that it keeps it forefront in my mind that that's not what I want. And so I just dismantle it all. And the glory is you do find what you're looking for. So when you start finding good things, you can really appreciate your husband with all his faults and all of his virtues. And it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be purposefully done, because otherwise, if you're not really paying attention, a foolish woman will tear down her house with her own hands. That's what the Bible says. We don't even realize we're doing it, and we're ripping our own heart lives down. And you're ruining your love story. You're writing your own love story. You are ruining your story, and you're making it really hard for people to love you, not just your husband, usually other people too. You know? And so we really want to take action against that. I'm telling you, one of the most important things I ever learned was to love somebody in spite of who they're not. It's just so important that we just drill that into our heads, that they don't have to be everything to us. I mean, you know, this "you complete me" stuff, that is way too much pressure on any person. Or, "I just want you to make me happy." I'm sorry, if I have to make you happy, that's way too big of an order. I can't do it. And your husband can't do it for you either. You have to make yourself happy. And then you can bring that into your relationship and add that with whatever he's got and try to make a nice cake out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But timing is everything too. You have to have timing. When you're playing tennis, there's a sweet spot right in the center of the racket. If you hit the ball there, it's powerful. You know, you hit it on the edge, you don't know where it's going. Hit on the other edge, but that sweet spot. And it's timing. You know, sometimes the queen knew that she was going to ask for something big. She didn't just run in and ask it. She made him a couple dinners, you know. That's always a good way. You know, and really it's you'll know when the timing is. We have to make the timing. See, the problem with communication, when people have communication problems, the problem is that there's not a relationship where that communication can take place.
Right.
So first, it's just like if I went out and said, "Oh yeah, I want to grow some sunflowers," and I just threw the sunflowers there. There's no place for them to grow. I can't just throw them there. I have to prepare the ground. It's got to be ready. And you know what? Your relationship, if you haven't been working on it and you haven't been the person that you should be in your relationship, you aren't going to have the kind of relationship that can handle tough situations with each other. You're not going to have the relationship where you can give constructive criticism, because actually, if you have a hostile environment, then anything that you say probably seems like criticism. And so someone doesn't feel like you're on their side. You don't have the right to enter into any of these conversations. You've got to build that first. Then you can enter into the problem-solving communications.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The guy that's going to get fired isn't going to have a meeting with the boss to how to make things better at the company.
Right.
You know, when there's nothing going in the relationship, that you've got to have something to base it on. Increase your chances of being listened to. You know, a friend was telling me how her husband would never hear her frustrations, and he didn't seem to do anything whenever she said something that bothered her. You know, and I said, well, you have to learn to speak the language of the one that you're trying to communicate with for him to hear you. He doesn't understand the way you're communicating it. So you have to try a different way of communicating. So your words and actions can help someone become receptive to the way you communicate.
we all have our own style too, you know what I mean? With my kids, there's some kids that I could say something bothered me, I could just throw it right off the cuff. Hey, by the way, you know, you did this, that's going to be a problem, you got to change that, okay, all right, love you, see you later. Then there's some kids, if I said that to them, it would just throw them into a tizzy. They would think I didn't even care about them. I would have to go take them to coffee, tell them how much I value them, how much I appreciate them in my life, and then maybe mention this thing that is a problem. But, you know, we have to know the way our husbands are. You know, some people are super, super sensitive, you know, and some people aren't. And I'm not super sensitive, and so I don't usually communicate well with really super sensitive people. I've had to learn, though, because I always loved my daughter, married a guy that is really sensitive, and he was getting really abused in this family. So, you know, we all had to take notice of how we were communicating. You know, we had to stop and say, wait a minute, we can't just come off like as hard, you know, just off the cuff anymore. This person is taking things very sensitively. We've got to be a little bit more gentle and, you know, adjust our communication style. So you have to know the style that your husband needs too, you know. And seriously, we have to, the discussion shouldn't be lengthy, because we were just talking about this, and I love this book. It says, under pressure or stress, the male's brain spatial function is activated and he stops talking. The woman's is activated. So what does she do? She starts talking. Right. And doesn't stop usually. Now, males are shutting down to avoid confrontation. There's usually a term for it. It's called stonewalling. If you want to learn some interesting things, look up stonewalling. But it's to delay or block a request, process, or person by refusing to answer questions or giving evasive replies. Now, you have to, that's just what they're capable of. You know, a lot of times they're not processing it. A lot of times you got to give someone time to catch up to where you're at. And then you have to give them time to try to understand what you're talking about. But also, this is an obvious, I think, but a lot of people don't realize this. Approach us, you know, if you've got to say before you start approaching the problem, what do I want to come out with for this problem? First of all, that'll help examine your motive. Do you want to just come out with that you're right and he's wrong about something? Do you want to come out with, you know, you do things better than him? That's a bad motive. Do you want to come out with, wow, that's spilt milk already, but the next time this happens, I think we need to establish a different guideline because I didn't like the emotions that went along with it. That's a good motive. You know, but you have to first decide what you want to get out of the communication before you go in. You know, that's why a good communication expert will tell you, like, even if you're going to ask for a raise, don't just lay it out there, you know. You've got to, like, say what you want for the raise. I was trying to help somebody who, she was saying that she wanted her spouse to be more spiritual. And I said, they have no clue what that means. What does that mean? More spiritual. So do you want me to wear a rosary? Do you want me to go to church? Do you want me so many times a week? Do you want me to open the Bible every day? Do you want me to pray with you every... What do you want? Like, we have to know what we want to come out. We can't just, like, tell our husband, we just wish you were less hostile. Okay, that's the whole character of somebody. That's not a problem. That is a whole character of somebody. You have to know the problem, make sure it's solvable to merit the conversation. Otherwise, it's just going to bring frustration. You know, mm-hmm. And, or I hate the way you look at things. Okay, be specific. I really don't like if I say something that I like about somebody else, you're always thinking I'm talking down about you, and I'm really not. Like, that's a specific, you know. Mm-hmm. Try to be as specific as you can so that it's not frustrating. And I'm sure we've all been there when somebody's trying to, you know, what's the problem? Well, you. Well, okay. How do I fix that? I'm working on it, but, you know. But also, enjoying him to work with you. You know, like, try to bring him in to see why the solution to the problem is important. You know,
well, the only thing is if we do this way, this is going to happen down the road. And I just think we need to change it. Like, try to get him in with you to work on the best possible solution. And be winsome in your approach. Winsome, I love that word. It means winsome. It doesn't mean lose some. It means winsome. Winsome means that when you're working through problems, if you're starting to get ugly or look scary, and look in the mirror sometimes, just, you know, try to keep a mirror close by and look in your face. If your face is scary or, you know, or contorted, or, you know, you're twitching or anything, or your adrenaline's pumping and no one can even see it, or, you know, you're biting someone's head off, it's not a good time. That's not going to accomplish anything. So stop. Just stop. Honestly, your choices are either to give it up until you could get winsome, or to waste time that you're never going to get back. And you usually will lose ground. So if you're trying to get somewhere in your relationship and you're becoming demanding or ugly or any of those things, stop. And once you feel yourself going on a tangent, you know what? Consider a different road into your husband's heart. Isn't that where you want to be? You're trying to get into his heart. You're not trying to browbeat him or get, you know, or master over him. You're trying to work out things together, and you're trying to win his heart. So remember that. But I think, like, to try to lessen the intensity, in her book, Fascinating Womanhood, Helen Angelin gave some really cute ways that you can lessen the intensity. My husband is such an intense man. Like, his intensity level is just unbelievable. He could go from zero to mega in a minute. So I have to really try to become an expert bomb diffuser, because he can just get, he's not like that now because he's grown so much as a person. But when he was younger, that same drive that got him places at work was creating a volcano eruptions at home. So it was tough sometimes, but I had to keep the situation cute instead of ugly. I didn't let it get ugly, you know. I'd have to remind him we're on the same team. I didn't want to get intense emotions back. The one good thing about him too, though, he didn't have intense emotions with it. It's not like he ever, like, hated me or anything like that. He'd just get mad about things, not usually about me, you know. He doesn't really get that mad about me usually. So, I mean, it's usually about something that, you know, just like I always say, when it's not going his way or when it's not going our way, that's when we get mad, right? And you have to try to bring laughter. So we want to be solutions-based. When you start to talk, we want to remember what we want as an outcome, and we want to have a solution in mind. And so, you know, don't make every single thing a face-off. You know, to ask him, you know, would you, this really bothers me when we go up north and we have kids everywhere and you have your guns laying there. Like, that is not going to fly. These kids can pick it up like that. And I keep asking you, I don't know what else to do short of not having the kids up there when you're going to be up there if you're leaving your guns out, because it's just too dangerous of a situation. Would it be that big of a deal if you just kept them locked up till you went out and went shooting? So I'm asking. Remember, when you ask questions too, it really does help drop a level. You know, sometimes if you're shooting a photograph and if the light's too bright, you have to drop a level to get the picture. Sometimes if you're communicating and, you know, things are getting intense, start asking questions. Well, how do you see that? You know, well, what do you think would be a better solution? Like, why do you think that's okay? Well, aren't you scared of that? Like, why am I so scared and you're not scared? And talk through some things. Even just by asking questions and getting another person talking, you start to exchange information and it can de-escalate the situation. You know what I mean? So a lot of times, if you're in a tirade or a big diatribe, just try to integrate a few questions that give them a chance to put something into the conversation. But a lot of times I'll just be like, you know, I'll tap him on the shoulder. He'll be in a mood or something. I'll go, remember when you used to be really nice to me? And he'll just start laughing. It's just one thing I can always make my husband laugh. So you know your little things, you know, whatever it is. Like, you know, I mean, if it's not to make him laugh, sometimes just to look at him go, really? Are we really doing this? You know, just something. You've got to lighten it up. And sometimes you just know you do. Even if you feel it's a situation, you got to, you know, soldier through or power through later. Sometimes you have to lighten it up for the moment. We don't need to communicate like the sitcoms act as normal. That's not normal. It's injurious. It costs you ground in your relationship. It makes you a mad woman. It makes him go mad. It's just not necessary. You know, we are able to handle things without that. Anyways, I'd rather invite my husband into my life than to demand it. So I put extra effort into making sure that my husband enjoys himself more with me than without me. And that takes effort. That doesn't happen just by mistake. So I don't want to nag. I want to be my husband's lover, not his mother. And so I find a substitute to work out my frustrations other than taking it out on the one I love the most. So I'll hit the treadmill. I'll work furiously. I'll clean something. I'll organize something. I'll create something. You know, I'm not going to... People don't realize... I don't want the result that's going to build something that took me... I mean, destroy something that took me so long to build. Like, we have to stop destroying our own relationships. It's far better to express my feelings in a nice way than ignore them. You know, and at the end of the day... Know that you lived being pleasant on purpose every day. Now, I'm not going to go into the fact of when people are abusive. I mean, you know, I just think that, you know, you can't allow someone to keep treating you wrong, whether it's emotional abuse, it could be physical abuse. I've dealt with some of very abusive situations where... I mean, even some of it was, some people were in physical abusive situations. Some of them were in emotional abusive situations, just being lorded over. Both of them are very injurious. And, you know, both of them, you have to protect yourself. And so when you get into a lot of important issues, even if you're counseling with somebody, make sure that they get good help to know how to get out of things that have gone that crazy. You know what I mean? We're talking more like normal annoyances, mm-hmm. blow-ups. We're not talking about people, you know, throwing stuff at you and things like that, making you do things and crazy things. So I'm not going to go into that there. And if anybody has any questions about that, we could go into that a different time. So anyways, go to page 84. In dealing with lapses of... when you're facing a problem with their behavior, you know what? If past disappointments make you suspicious, you know, choose to believe the best. I think that's really good wisdom, choosing to believe the best. I'd way rather believe the best about someone than believe the worst. Do you know people that always are expecting the worst? I'd way rather expect the best. Just makes you have a happier life. If you're expecting the best from people, you might get disappointed sometimes, but then just expect the best anyways. You know, I'd rather be that than expecting the worst. But remember to love and accept people just as the way that they are. You know, you may need to assure people that the suggestions you're making are so that, you know, for the success and effectiveness of your relationship and so of the person, and you don't want to be misunderstood, you know. But make sure, too, when you're going to confront a problem, that it's not just something that's irritating you, that it's really going to be a problem. Like, you know, if something irritating you, just work through it. Try not to be so easily irritated all the time. But when there's things that you can't live with or without, then you have to talk and work it out between you. You might have to go back a few times. You know, I'm just sorry. I'm not willing to give this up. I mean, there were some things, you know...
something that's a part of you, you know, a desire that you always had to have a pet or anything, you know, whatever it is. Like, you know, some things you have to work through. It's just you. If I know a lot of people get married and then all of a sudden the spouse doesn't want the person seeing their family. And, you know, that is worth working through. Like, you have to get to the other side of that. But I love that poem on page 85. You guys can read it later. It's called Normal Day. I mean, a normal day can be a treasure. Make your normal days be a treasure. I mean, so many times we're looking for spectacular. Make your normal wonderful. I love normal days. Sometimes I'm just go, go, go. I love to have a normal day. But where are you? What role do you have in other people's life? What is your role? And what role do you have in your husband's life? How does your husband describe you to his friends? And where do you want to be? And what have you done or said that gives him something good to say? You know, what have you given him good to say this week? You know? And we're going to look at some positive ways to improve bad habits. And if you don't have bad habits, we'll make sure you don't create any. But does your husband feel like he's top priority? You know, what are some of the things that make him take second place? You know, what are some of the little things that you put in place to make him know he's important to you? Like, one of the things we always tell each other is, if it's important to you, it's important to me. And to do that, a long time ago, we made it a rule, like a kind of quote-unquote rule, that if you ask me to do something, I make it important enough to me to do it as soon as possible. So usually, if Gary asks me to do something, I will do it first before I get my stuff done. Or if I ask him to do something, he does it. In fact, it was funny because I used to have scrapbooking classes in my house, and we were scrapbooking one night, and my husband was coming in from a trip, and he had been gone for a week or whatever. And he walked in, he wore a suit when he traveled, and he'd carry his briefcase. And some of the girls there, like, we never, it wasn't this class or anything, we didn't talk about stuff like that. So some of the girls were there, and I said, oh, it's so hot. We don't have our screens up. And I'll tell Gary when he gets home. And a couple of the girls saying, you know, when he comes home, you watch. He is just going to drop everything and put those screens up. I thought, wow, that's a lot of pressure, poor guy. But sure enough, he came home, and I go, oh, it's so hot in here. Put his briefcase down, and he went and got the screens and put them up before he even took his suit off or anything. But it was just so funny that those girls knew that what was important to me was going to be important to him, you know? So what do you do for him like that? I mean, if you have a day where you're able to run errands, do you ever ask him, you know, what can I do for you while you're out? Do you ever say, is there something you want me to accomplish for you today? If you know he's stuck or he's got jury duty or he can't get to something, you know, do you say, what can I do for you? It was funny because last week I had a really busy week, and my husband all of a sudden realized that all three of our cars he had to go get fixed. So that meant that I had to drive back and forth and get rides and do it while he was gone from work. But I was just like, okay. You know, he was so happy that I did it on his schedule. And I did it. You know, I said, no, I'll do that for you. Don't worry about it. And these words were ringing in my ears, because you have to decide, like, that you are looking for ways to make him, his priorities, your priorities. But I'm going to grab a water real quick. Does anybody want one?
No, thanks.
No, thanks.
No, thank you. I think I'll start. Anyways, I think that one of the greatest things that I learned early on in my marriage is, and I think I got it from my family too, because they do it a lot, is to make it important when my husband walks through the door. So when he walks through the door, like, I try to make it a big deal. Like, I'll just run over, even if it's just for a few minutes. And even when I had all the kids or I was homeschooling, I'd turn what I was doing off if it was on the stove or anything, and I would just go and go, hey, how are you? You know, what's going on? you know, go get change and come on out, you know, and I'd try to make sure that the kids weren't bombarding them with problems, that I wasn't just, you know, a lot of women, their temptation is, oh, you're home, good, I'm out of here. They throw the baby to their husband and they like go out the revolving door and the husband hasn't even come home and it's all so chaotic. You know, I think that people need a little time. So even if it's just 5 minutes, I think that it's just nice to know, like, oh, and even if you don't have kids, it's that 5 minutes is important, you know, for us as our husband's coming in just to, you know, take his coat off and change his mindset, leave his work things. So it is really nice to, at first, you know, just run over and greet somebody. I mean, I loved that feeling. My grandpa would always act like it was a big deal whenever he would see us. It'd be like, Karen! He would act like I was a movie star or something. It was so uplifting. Like, you almost got excited to see him because he was going to get so excited to see you. And so I like that feeling. And I wanted to perpetuate that. So I think that's really nice. If you could try it this week. You know, we're talking about going overboard, going outside of your norm. When your husband comes home, take a minute, come downstairs. If I'm sewing downstairs, I'll come upstairs. Sometimes I don't hear him. He comes downstairs first to see me. But, I mean, that is a really nice thing to do, is to make someone feel special when they come in their home. You know what I mean? And it makes a difference, too. Don't you want, when your husband comes home and you're there, to be different than when he comes home and you're not there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to be a zero, right? You want it to be better because you're there. So just go greet them, you know. Say, do you want something? Do you want water or something? Go, whatever. You know, that's really nice. And actually, it's something nice that you can do for each other. There's sometimes not a whole lot that we can do for each other because we've kind of got our roles established, you know, by now. And you know, it's just nice to step out and do a couple things for each other. But this is all about that. So, also, when I had chores or things to do, I tried to do them before my husband came home. I liked hanging out with my husband. Like, even now, we'll be like, oh, okay, so what time are you going to be done? Oh, I'll be done at 8. Okay, call me and I'll come up and we'll hang out. So, even now, we'll try to, you know, make sure that we both have time to hang out together, you know, what time are we going to be done, kind of thing. But also know that let your husband know that you consider his needs above your own. Like, does he think that, or, you know, you have to do something? And are you really the great wife that you think you are? Ask him. He'll tell you. You know, if you say, what kind of wife do you think I am? You know, do you think, what areas do you think I should get better in? Even if he doesn't ask you, at least you're worried about it. Anyways, what defines you? Are you working hard at your relationships, or are you bored and discontent? And I think that we have to work to get the fruit of our labor. So I know choosing to accept your husband at face value is not easy. And a lot of women give up, you know. As Christians, though, we're supposed to love our enemies, do good to people who hate us, have perfect hearts. We don't just set aside goals because they're difficult. You know, it's difficult to love somebody for who you are and who they're not. It is not easy. Like, a lot of people abandon relationships. I mean, I'll tell you right now, go out in the workplace, go out with people, and just even start talking to them for a little bit, you will just be shocked at the friendships that end. Like, sisters stop talking to each other, families that aren't getting together, stupid stuff, just because people don't work through relationships. So who are you going to end up with? By yourself? I mean, you know, you got to work through things. You're not always going to be with people that feel the same way about you that you do. Now, I love the equation of change posted in Sacred Influence. It says that if your marriage just isn't a number on a scale from 1 to 10, it's a mathematical equation. I always loved algebra and everything. X plus Y equals Z. Now, if you just change, you know, now say that your husband is X.
He's never going to change. Say he just refuses to change. But you are Y. If you take the Y for you and you put X plus 2Y, it doesn't equal Q anymore. Or Z, whatever I said. But that's the beauty, that change is always possible, even if it's only unilaterally. And I love that, that you can change the relationship by changing who you are. That's why we always focus on how we can influence our husbands, not on how we can change them. You know, a lot of times we are more aware. We're the ones that have a real heart for the home, and we're the ones that have the heart to do the changing that's necessary mm-hmm. to have the relationships that we're willing to fight for. So, and what is your purpose in life? It is to be the best that you can be for the glory of God. I love this part. Also, I love this other part too. It says that even if your husband never changes, you make the marriage better by changing yourself or changing your responses to him. You need to be the best you can be, living out being an amazing, godly woman and living with strength and wisdom. And while you're doing that, you get infused with a new love, not just for your husband, but for other people too. Mm-hmm. You learn that it happens when you purpose to love people and let them make mistakes and not be the judge and the jury and everything else, then you can love everybody more. And so I love that. And when you start to work on your own weaknesses too, you have a better understanding for other people's weaknesses, you know? So anyways, what is your purpose in life? First of all, if you're overly concerned with changing your husband, you're going to miss out on the larger purpose God put you on earth for. God gave our husbands a free will, and part of our role is not to take that away. So our mission starts at home but can impact the world. We need to take the relationship victories and apply them to other relationships and show people how to love people. People don't know how to love. You know, and our love, the love that we see in the world, it is just so conditional. It's just like, if you love me, I'll love you back. If you mm-hmm. have an issue or you are having a bad day or you're going through something, forget it. Unless it's under 3 months. How long is your issue going to be? You know, I can maybe know 3 months. But people go through stuff, you know? Anyways, have no way of knowing whether or not you married the wrong person, but I know a lot of people have wrong ideas about marriage and what it takes to make marriage happy and successful. I'll be the first to admit that it's possible you did marry the wrong person. However, if you treat the wrong person like the right person, you could end up having married the right person after all. On the other hand, if you marry the right person and you treat them wrong, you can end up marrying the wrong person. I like that mm-hmm. quote. I know that it's far more important to be the right kind of person than to marry the right person. In short, whether you married the right or wrong person is primarily up to you. That's by Zig Ziglar. In chapter 6 is one of my favorite twins that I love to keep forever in my mind. Reasonable and realistic. If you're going to have any relationships, you have to just power twin those and make them a part of your everyday vocabulary. You need to learn to be reasonable and you need to learn to be realistic. And it said that romantic comedies are ruining our life because we look at TV and we want what they have, but I mean, they make everything look good. I mean, they can have a crazy fight and call each other names and the next minute they're just fiercely in love. That's not real life. So it's really important to know that this is not the movie effect where we have these unrealistic ideas of what we can do in our relationship or what we can have, and it's not realistic. You know what? Look at real relationships instead. You know, I mean, and don't be so unrealistic. You know, I mean, sometimes people have so many unrealistic expectations. They think that things should be part of a relationship like every single day, and it's not. We can appreciate occasions. Like it was, you know, the other night I went to Daniel's fundraiser and it was just so I can't even describe the feelings. Like, this past week, I had a few feelings of events that were just embedded into my heart. I always tell my kids, I'm going to take a picture and put it in my heart. You know, just think of it whenever I close my eyes. Because that's what really happened. So the first one was when I went down the hill to see my kids, because they were all waiting there for my birthday. And they said, I said, I'll just come to the park and see you guys. But I got there 15 minutes late because my earlier bike ride was extended. So when I came down to get down the hill, every single one of my grandkids was there. They were all running at me with their little legs, carrying violets and Starbucks and kale drinks and balloons and raspberries, like all my favorite things. And then behind them were their mod, like the ant squad, all walking together, holding the, you know, the littlest babies and coming up that hill. And the kids literally tackled me. And I was just like, I will never forget that sight. And then it was just so precious. The other one was going into my son's fundraiser and seeing my kids out there just supporting him and what he's, the doors that are opening for him and the people that are paving a path for him to make such an impact in teenagers' lives. Like, it is just unbelievable. And how he's come, like, out of where he wasn't clear what he was doing. Last year was in transition. This year he has got just such a dynamic vision, and it is just unbelievable how exciting it was. So you know what? Those are moments that I treasure, that I put in as history. And when other moments happen, you know, then you draw back on those awesome times. Like, make some awesome moments and freeze them in your mind and soak them in so much and just go, I am going to remember this. Like, I'm going to freeze this moment. Just, it doesn't have to be anything big. It could just be, you know, grabbing hands when you're walking down the street, you know, and, or it could just be, it was funny because me and my sister were walking at the beach and we just grabbed each other's hand and we were just swinging our hand, and it was, we were saying, we're just like little girls. And it's so funny. My niece took a picture. She was laughing and I just loved that picture. I put it on my phone. I wouldn't post it because of it couldn't have any kind of implication, but it's just so special. Like, appreciate your special times. They're not going to be every day. You know what? We're not that unreasonable to think they're going to be every day. But when you have those times, don't just gloss over them. Make sure that you're appreciating them and savoring them and putting them in your heart so you can pull them back out. You know, and if your husband does something awesome for you, pause, you know, stop, think about it, and, you know, really maximize your good moments, because we all go through struggles. We all have times that get us mad or upset, but really learn to just put a magnifier on those really special times, you know? That time, like, you should be able to have a highlight reel in your mind, like, oh, when I just looked over him at the Stanley Cup playoffs and we were walking down that street and high-fiving all the homeless Detroit people, and just, you know, whatever, like those special times. Like, even if you can make a list of them in your mind, like I did that. I said, I'm going to make a list of my top 50 things that we did together. I think I did that for his birthday a year or two ago. And I just put all those times in. It was just like so heartwarming. And seriously, do that. If you find yourself getting impatient with your husband or something, just write down some of your epic moments together. We have so many wonderful times together, but sometimes we let the moment eclipse those. And that's why it's important to remember that situations aren't as important as that relationship. But anyways, how reasonable and realistic are you? Where do you get your notions of the relationship? How reasonable and realistic are you about who you are? What do you expect from yourself? Or do you just expect everything from him? These are questions you've got to ask yourself. You know, ask yourself if you're balanced in your expectations from him, if you expect that much from yourself. You know, like, you know, are you able to appreciate your man for who he is, not some ideal that you have of him? You know, a real man, a real person.
you know, with issues. But having a keen sense of appreciation can be developed. It's not something we're born with. In fact, a lot of times we're born with the ability to see the worst, not the best. We have to literally train ourselves to see the best and not the worst. It takes, you know, training. But love is the strongest force there is. When you learn to love as God does, unconditionally, without stipulations, that's when you're most like God. When you love God's way, it is the fruit of the Spirit. It can be learned. It says in Titus, the older women are to train the younger women to love their husbands. If you can be trained to love, it can be learned. And if you feel like you don't love enough and you want to love more, you can learn how to love more. And that's what we're doing. We're learning how to give more, consider ourselves less, not hold people accountable for every single mistake they make, put a blindfold on their eyes. These are all ways to love more. Learn to shut up. You know, not expect someone to be too much for you. Don't give all your expectations to someone else. Make your own, encourage your own self, and don't look for someone else to provide all your needs. You know, all those things are just ways that we learn to love. And learn to see with love. You know, seeing with the eyes of love, it takes a little practice and a lot of maturity to not see someone else's faults. And it is powerful. I mean, I see that even in every relationship, even with my grandkids, there's so many benefits that you can't even measure them. When I see my granddaughter, she's a little spunky one, and she gets in a lot of mischief. And it's funny because she never, ever wants to disappoint me. Because she knows how much I think of her. And, you know, I always tell her, when I see you, my heart just flip-flops. It goes bloop, bloop, bloop. But, you know, and I say, no, don't. I don't let anyone tell me anything bad about her, you know. And if so, I say, and I'll say to her, I'll say, did you do that? Now, I know, even when it's hard, I trust you will tell me the truth. And she will always tell me. She is just, you know, but people a lot of times live up to what you expect of them. And that's why a lot of times people are living up to far little of what they think that we expect them to be. You know, that's why we should expect the best in our husband. They usually, if they see that consistently, they're not going to disappoint you and be the worst in the face of someone that expects the best from them. They're just not. But you know what? Make people and see people as better than they are. You're going to enjoy your life more. I always tell my kids, if something happens to me, just know I lived like 3 lifetimes because I soaked up every day like it was a couple days. Like I soaked up my moments. So just know that, you know what? You want to really live your life. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is the real, your real life. And it's only going to be as good as you make it be. And, you know, running from person to person doesn't usually fix things. And it's just easier to learn how to love correctly and to make your relationship matter. But appreciate and treasure character traits in your husband. Look for things like honesty, dependability, kindness, love, loyalty. When you express appreciation for virtue, they will know that the things that matter are things that make you a better person and make them a better person. You know, you concentrate on what really, really matters. Like, find things, you'll find that you're not able, a lot of times if you are living with the right priorities, then you don't have time to make people feel special because you're concentrating all your time on you and things that don't matter. I used to be like that. I used to be so busy training for races that I didn't even go to a very important shower in my life because it was interfering with a training schedule. And I looked back and I thought, I was so selfish. I have learned so much. And I think that the way you learn a lot in your life is by putting a little bit of what you know into practice and then a little bit more. And you keep learning and your propensity just grows to get a better and better life and to get more and more discipline to live a better life. But I just feel like, wow, I've come so far from that, and I hope I still have a lot farther to go because I just look back at the way I used to think, and my thinking was so skewed based on just because I was so selfish. But when you really aren't learn to live without being so selfish, you just get so many advantages you can't even see them. And not the least of which is that, you know, you are easier to love for other people too. And you love people easier too. And you have more understanding for people, you know. But when you live out priorities that matters in your own life, you will naturally appreciate others for things that matter as well, you know. Look at the things that you compliment in other people and you'll think, see the things that you value and the things that, you know, we're not like, you know, my two-year-old granddaughter, when I come in, she's like, "Hi, Nana, I like your earrings." She always checks to see my earring. "I like your earrings. I like your lipstick. I like your shirt." I mean, I hope we've gotten a little older than two. You know, I hope we're looking for something besides earrings, lipstick, and a shirt on someone. So look at the things that you, you know, compliment others and things that, you know, that mean something to you, and make sure that it's not limited to things, you know, that a two-year-old sees. We want to get mature. So be grateful for the things that someone does for you. I mean, and verbalize it. And be patient. Sometimes, you know, and sometimes, you know, you might have a husband that you can praise him because he's at the gym and he's all buff and everything. Another time, you might actually see the beautiful character it took for that man to give up the gym because of something that he's going through in his life or your life or with your family, and his lack of being in his normal great shape might actually be something that defines success to you and that you see as something to compliment. So really, sometimes you can compliment on the wrong things. I used to tell people, you know, when my girls were dating, I'd go like, "Show me a buff guy that goes to the gym every day and is dressed impeccably and he has a great car and doesn't even hear a place, and I'll show you one selfish guy. Good luck getting married to him." But seriously, we want somebody who's well-balanced. And sometimes that may mean that, you know, we're real people. We don't get to be Photoshopped. We might be carrying an extra few pounds. We might not be able to get to the gym as often as we want because we're doing so many things for other people. And we might have to work. And we might have to do other things. And you know what? Sometimes those things aren't an affront to us. They're a testament to us that we have our priorities in line. So we have to remember that, you know, and not that that's all about being reasonable and realistic, right? Mm-hmm. And appreciate what kind of man your husband is. You know, if you've gotten far away from appreciating anything about your husband, you know, or you can't imagine anything, you know, look at that history together. Remember what bonded you together. Say some of those things to him. Remember when we this, remember when we that, you know. And have you appreciated the pursuit your husband has dedicated himself to be good at? Maybe, you know, he went to trade school or, you know, whatever. Are they, you know, I know he may have had to learn a new job. He may have, you know, always wanted to be, you know, play music and had to learn to do things like that and to, you know, troubleshoot stuff. Whatever it is, you know, have you appreciated what they have considered something worthy of their efforts? You know, anything, you know, sometimes they're like finding diamonds. You don't just find them without paying attention. Pay attention, you know. When my husband, I try to, you know, pay attention to the things that are going on in his lives and the way that he's able to handle things that happen without him expecting it. And he's just got a lot of really great qualities, but because he doesn't shout them out loud and clear, I could miss them if I'm not really looking for them. And I don't want to miss them. I want to appreciate them. And if not me, who do I want to appreciate them? Mm-hmm. I want to be the one that sees them and appreciates them. In Charles Swindoll's book, Strike the Original Match, I love this. He says, Cecil Osborne refers to a person who possesses an overemphasis on the externals as a narcissistic woman.
She is the one who is an inordinate self-love. She's preoccupied with her face, her body, her own interests, which she perceives as an extension of herself. A man married to a narcissistic woman is in for trouble. And now there's narcissistic men too. So, if the world does not continue to praise her and does not cater to her infantile whims, she can develop all kinds of physical and emotional symptoms. She has to be the center of attention. She's a psychic scalp collector, flirting with men to prove that she still is attractive. So we want to look at things that are not just about what we look like. It's some of the things that we do, you know. So we want to keep our priorities right. Make your husband feel like a winner with you. An interesting thing is at football games or a game that your husband loves, if he feels that the team can't catch up, he always wants to leave the game. I can't tell you how many games we heard with a turnaround after we left the game because my husband felt like they weren't going to have a comeback. So it was like, just forget it. Let's go. I'm like, let's just watch the game, you know? He's like, no, let's go. But you know what we want? That's just a symptom. A lot of men feel that way. So we don't want to make them feel like they're not winning. So make them feel like they're winning with us. You know, let them know that, yeah, he can go out in that workplace and he can get ragged on at work and people can drive him crazy and it can be a crazy, you know, place. But when he comes home, he's just loved and appreciated for who he is. It's okay that he doesn't have a quota to meet. He doesn't have sales things to meet. He's not in danger of losing his position or anything like that. He's in a really safe place. And even some of the women that work, they're like, well, yeah, what about me? Well, yeah, wouldn't you like someone to do that for you? You can't control what that happens to you, but you can surely control whether you do it for your husband. You know, it's just a good focus. But the last thing, I want to say two other things. Let's see. Okay, so sometimes a strength could be a weakness. You know, and you should read that part because if you look underneath, like sometimes if you're decisive, you could be seen as argumentative or stubborn. If you're gentle or kind, you could be looking as a pushover. If you're confident, you could look obnoxious. You know, if you're tenacious, it could look like you're unyielding. So a lot of times what we see is an expression of a character that's a good character, but we might see it from a different angle. Mm-hmm. So look and see if, you know, sometimes I really love this with my kids because I think a lot of times my kids, like we would see it as something bad, but the things that we saw as bad were really good character qualities that just needed to be appreciated and maybe honed in a little bit. Also, realize that sometimes there could be something running in the background. You know, today my computer all of a sudden just shut down because my hard drive was out of space. So here it's like I can't even make it move. And it's because there were too many things running in the background. And you know what? Sometimes I know once my daughter had come in and she was not herself. And she was just, you know, I went over to her and I just grabbed her hands and I go, what happened? Are you okay? Is something going on today? And she just burst into tears. Now with their husbands, they might not do that. But you know what? Sometimes their brusque attitude or their, they might even isolate attitude or their quietness or moodiness. It might be that something's going on in their life that we need to like find out what's going on too. So be on the lookout for that. Also, don't expect people to be so perfect. Because when you don't expect people in your life to be perfect, you're not going to crumble when they disappoint you. I'll just lay it down right now. Your husband is going to disappoint you a lot. Now just write it on a thing. Post it as a beautiful picture on your wall. You can put a thing in it. We are going to disappoint each other. Now that you have that down, you're not going to fall apart when it happens. You can't like do that. Like, enjoy your life on purpose. You're stuck with the bad stuff. Enjoy the good stuff. You know what? And I'm telling you, your problems are going to come, but by preparing, you're going to be able to get through the tough times with as little damage as possible. You know, the Bible says we all stumble and fall and offend in many things. So no one's exempt. Your husband is going to stumble, fall, and offend you. You're going to stumble, fall, and offend him. in many ways, but being reasonable and realistic is to know this and to choose to love in spite of it and regardless of it and not be shocked or dismayed or overwhelmed and undone when it happens. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just pray, Lord, we thank you for this awesome class that just reminds us over and over again of the choices that we make as we sow the seeds that we sow every day that end up yielding harvests for our tomorrows. Help us to be very, very wise. Help us to choose our relationships, to choose love, and to let others, let our enemies be at peace with us, Lord, because they see your favor in our life, Lord, and our ways please you. Help us give each woman here wisdom as to how to handle their relationships to bring them to the next level. And let us see the testimony that these things that we've learned tonight, we are going to put into action. And it's going to make a difference in our lives, a positive difference. And we can live the awesome life that you said could actually be like days of heaven on earth. That is an incredible promise. When we do things the right way, that's what we can have. And we don't want to stop at anything less. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.